Well, good evening, everyone. My name is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and I want to extend a warm welcome to everyone who's joining us here for our weekly show on Brighteon called The Tenpenny Files on Your Health. So for the last 22 years or so, I've given literally thousands of interviews across radio, TV, podcasts, live conferences, and other types of seminars. And almost all my information has almost always been about vaccines in one way or another. But as a trained ER doctor who was the director of a level 2 trauma center for 12 years and an integrative medical physician with a very busy practice in Cleveland, Ohio since 1996, there are so many other things to talk about and discuss. This is an educational show that I hope will bring value and information on your health. Tonight, our monthly special guest, Twyla Braze. Twyla Braze is president of the co-founder Citizens for Counsel for Health Freedom, CCHF. I'll get that right the second time around. Patient-centered privacy advocacy policy organization, and she's from Minnesota. We will be right back. You won't want to miss this update. Zeolite is a detox spray. We work specifically with a company called Touchstone Essentials. They are an incredible company. We've been working with them now for several years. And zeolite is a mineral that goes through your body like a one-way basket. It will clean out heavy metals such as arsenic and mercury, aluminum, cadmium, and it hooks onto those metals from a one-way perspective. So once it's bound, it goes out through your urine or your stools and doesn't get redeposited in other places. Everybody needs to have a detox product in their life, and this one is so easy to use, and it's so safe. You can take it when you're pregnant. You can take it when you're nursing. You can give it to little children. You can even give it to infants, and quite frankly, I give it to my dog. I actually put a little bit of the zeolite in his water because until we all stop living in a toxic world, we all need to get some of those extra toxicities out, the heavy metals, the persistent organic pollutants, the things that are floating through the air, the different things that we come in touch with in our environment. And we are a big fan of zeolite from Touchstone Essentials. We've been a big, big, big fan of their products for several years. Go to drtenpenny.com/detox to get your first bottle of zeolite spray for $50 off. Well, welcome back, everyone. Twyla Braze is the president and co-founder of Citizens Council for Health Freedom, CCHF, a patient-centered, privacy-focused, free market policy organization established in Minnesota now 26 years ago to protect patient and doctor freedom. Her efforts have led to amazing, amazing results. In fact, we are going to talk a little bit later tonight about the Wedge for Health Freedom and the Patient Toolbox, which they've just expanded. On an even broader scale, Twyla's Health Freedom Minute is heard daily by more than 5 million listeners on more than 870 radio stations across 48 states. She's provided testimonies to members in Congress, to state legislators, and around the country. Her work has been featured on CNN, Forbes, Fox, The Hill, The Washington Journal, The Washington Street Journal, The Washington Post, and more. All of these efforts have led to the Minnesota physicians, including her, to be on the list of the 100 most influential healthcare leaders in 2020. In the midst of all that, she is the author of an 8-time award-winning book called The Big Brother in the Exam Room, which I keep a copy of it right here because it is just, it is a compendium of just amazing information. And I think that everybody should be able to have that. Maybe Hannah, you can, if you've got the graphic of that, you can pull that up. Midst of all she does, she's got that, and we must really talk about that tonight. So, Twyla, your assistant sent me a long list. We could do like a 3-hour show tonight of all the things that you've been up to and what you've been doing so far. You've been doing a lot of legislative work right now. Why don't we start there? Talk about some of the legislative things you've been up to.
So at the very end of January, we were in, me and our legislative and policy director, we were in Washington, D.C. with a specific mission in mind. One, we have a bill to make HIPAA what it should be, which is a actual patient privacy law, which it is not today. And then the other one was to work on getting the Retirement Freedom Act reintroduced. The Retirement Freedom Act would make sure that people could still have their Social Security benefits, even if they chose not to enroll in Medicare. Essentially, it would give them the right to opt out of Medicare, which today you essentially don't have, because of something the Clintons did back in 1993, and they tied them together and said, if you don't enroll in Medicare, you can't have Social Security. No law, no rule, should never have happened, right? And so So we were there and we were talking with Gary Palmer's office from Alabama, and he had just reintroduced it. And then we were asking Ted Cruz's office to reintroduce theirs. And so that is coming up in probably within a week or so that they will have that back out. Although I suppose it could have happened and I, just in the last few days and missed it because I've been traveling. That's what we were there to do and to get additional sponsors to that bill, because it's really important. Unless you have freedom from Medicare, you will not have healthcare freedom, because that is the government's biggest healthcare program in the country. It is government-run healthcare. It is not private market, it's not free market, and it's not freedom. So that's what we were doing at that level. And then we're also dealing with a whole bunch of different state legislators around the country with legislation that they would like to have enacted. And for instance, we were invited to New Hampshire to testify on a bill that would have created the best and strongest health medical privacy law in the country. We were there to testify. They weren't going to make any decisions. We understand that the decisions are going to be made next week. Or by the beginning of the week after that. So that's just a sample of what we are doing across the country.
So let's talk about that a little bit more, about the act in New Hampshire. And is that an isolated thing, or do you see more and more of that coming up in other states?
Well, I think as we have been able to talk to state legislators more, we've been invited to different conferences where state legislators are, then we have been able to make the case and to tell them that HIPAA does not protect privacy. So we call this a deliberate deception that the government has imposed across the country that HIPAA protects privacy, but it does not. It actually opened up your medical records. And the only way to stop what has transpired for 20 years in this country, with everybody getting access to your data without your consent, well, not everybody, that's probably a stretch, but all sorts of people can have access to it without your consent, as long as those who hold the data choose to share it. So there are 2.2 million entities that could have access to your data if your doctor, your hospital, your lab, your health plan, if they chose to share it, they do not have to ask for your consent. And so, you know, to stop this, one of the ways to stop this is for states to actually enact and enforce their own medical privacy law, a state medical privacy law. Because one thing that HIPAA says is that if a state has an actual privacy law, a strong privacy law, then that's the law that has to be followed. So if a state requires patient consent for the sharing of the data, for putting it on the state health information exchange, for putting it on the e-health exchange, which is a nationwide network of networks where all sorts of entities can have access from all over the country without your consent. If a state says they need patient consent in order to do that kind of sharing, that's what has to happen. And so we were very excited and still are very excited about what's happening in New Hampshire. And we did our best to counter all of the different arguments that the opponents were lined up. There were probably 10 or 11 opponents from every organization. And, in healthcare, it was like, I think maybe the chamber was there, but for sure the medical association, the hospital association, I think a health plan was there. There were different advocacy groups that were there, all saying, you know, that they didn't want this bill to pass. And so there we are, coming in from the state of Minnesota at the request of the author to say, no, actually, you have these things incorrect. This witness said this, but it's actually this way. This witness said this, but it's actually this way. And so it was a wonderful opportunity to counter everything that had been said before us and to tell the truth to these members of the New Hampshire House. It was the House.
What was their objection? I know that data is the new money, that anybody that holds the data and can crunch the data and sell it to the pharmaceutical industry, the FDA, the USDA, I mean, all these different things, it's all about getting data and how many people have these kinds of diseases, because then the marketing arm of the pharmaceutical industry up on Madison Avenue in New York City can start to create and market new drugs. I mean, I understand that. Is that their sole argument, is that they need need to have data? Is that how you have all these groups standing up and saying, no, you can't have privacy. You have to give us all your information.
So they wouldn't actually probably say that, because they would try to convince you instead that HIPAA protects privacy, that HIPAA is a national law that every state follows and that protects patients' data. But, you know, then we were there to say, no, actually, for instance, the first national coordinator of the Office of Health Information Technology actually said something like this, and I'm paraphrasing it. It is in the book, but I'm paraphrasing it because I don't have the book right with me. And his name is David Brailer, and he said something like this. You can't force a covered entity to share your data with the people you want it shared with, and you can't stop them from sharing it with those you don't want it shared with. And so, you know, that's a reality. And to be able to get up and give that kind of a quote to all of these legislators. And, you know, a lot of legislators, you know, they try their best, but there's a lot of things that they don't know. They hear from these lobbyists who just want them to do X, Y, and Z. And the lobbyists don't bother to tell them the real truth or the facts or the fact that, I mean, maybe even the lobbyists don't know that HIPAA doesn't protect privacy. But I think in this case, like the Hospital Association, the Medical Association, they would know that the HIPAA is actually a permissive sharing rule. It's not a privacy rule. It's not a privacy law. And they know this, and they don't want to have any impediments in their way when it comes to sharing the data, using the data, sharing it amongst themselves, you know, maybe being reimbursed for the kind of data that they would share. They can't actually sell it, but, you know, you could reimburse it in other ways. And so, you know, just as how valuable, I mean, you said that it was the new gold, right? Is that what you said, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, Matt, our legislative director, came up with a statistic that United Health Group, they have a data subsidiary, and all it does is health data. They don't take care of patients. They don't do anything like that. And I believe it was in 2022, could have been 2023, but I think it's 2022, their revenue was $18.9 billion. And all they do is health data. So these entities, these kind of, you know, plans and these companies and these hospitals, they want to be able to use the data for their own benefit. And when it comes to hospitals, health plans, the government, for example, you know, they want to be able to look into the electronic health record, use the electronic health record, track the doctors, control the doctors, limit what the doctors can do, penalize them if they do something that's outside the standard protocol, right? But they're creating the protocols that are not necessarily for the benefit of the patient, but are for the benefit of their own profits or their own bottom line, or getting a kickback from the government's shared savings program. It's in Medicare. It's a shared savings program. And if they save the government money, perhaps by, you know, giving you a 5-year HIP instead of a 15-year, you know, new HIP, then they can get a kickback. They can get money back. They can share in the savings.
So what does it actually mean then? And I'll just ask you this and then we'll move on, because we got so many other things to talk about tonight. But what does it actually mean when I go into a new doctor's office? Because I'm on Medicare now, and I hear you, man. It is the pain of all pains in terms of healthcare things. And so I really, really hope that this legislative effort passes to separate the Social Security from the Medicare. But what does it mean when I go into a new doctor's office or a dentist's office and have to sign a HIPAA form? I mean, that you're required to sign this HIPAA form. It becomes part of your medical record. If it doesn't protect me in any way or any of my data, other than shuffling paper, what's the point?
Well, this is why we call it the deliberate deception. Part of the deception is to get you to believe that it actually protects you. And so, I don't know, 7 years ago or so, we were in Washington, D.C., and we asked all of these different staffers in 22 different offices of members of Congress and of the U.S. Senate. And we said, what does it mean when you sign that HIPAA form at the doctor's office? And to a person, almost using the exact same words, they said it means that my information is between me and my doctor. Now, these are the people who advise Congress about, you know, anything having to do with healthcare. These are the healthcare staffers. But all of them believe that HIPAA protected them. They did not know that it is, you know, a permissive data sharing rule. They just, you know, believed when it says notice of privacy practices that it meant privacy. When it said HIPAA, the privacy rule, that it meant privacy. They just believed that. They had no idea. And so it's the same thing. It's really all about manufacturing and propagating this huge deception that HIPAA protects you, while all along outside of your site, the data is being shared broadly without your consent. But you're calm because you think HIPAA protects you. So you're not worried because you think it's about protecting you, but it's not. And so it's deceiving you to keep you from knowing what the truth is and then actually working to try and get your privacy back.
You know, one more layer, turn over one more rock. You know, they say that if you keep turning over cow piles, they continue to smell. You know, that's sort of a country, living in the country vernacular that I kind of grew up with. Every time you turn over a cow pile, it smells. So here's another cow pile in government that we've turned over to find one more lie, one more way that they have lied to us and deceived us about things that have to do with our health. You know, you have recently sent out a press release about this new website, this launch of this new website that you're calling called The Wedge. Now, we've talked briefly about The Wedge a few times when you've been on here before, because I'm so blessed to have you be a guest on my show the last Monday night of the month. But this is a directory of cash-based practices. Why don't you talk about that a little bit? And I think that we can squeeze in your new video before we go on our break. So go ahead and talk about The Wedge.
Sure. The Wedge of Health Freedom is an online directory of cash-based practices. We've got about 450 practices across the country. There's four pharmacies. There's one surgery center, and dentists are joining. And so some people are finding their dentist and their doctor by going to The Wedge. And so it's at jointhewedge.com, and it's a way to find a doctor who works for you. It's all cash-based, so they don't take insurance, they don't take Medicare, they don't take Medicaid, but they will take any Medicare patient who wants to pay cash. And a lot of Medicare patients want to pay cash because they need a doctor in their corner, somebody who really cares about them and will be there to answer their questions.
Services not provided by their conventional doctor.
That's
too
correct. Yeah.
You know? So, yeah.
So we have a brand new website. We redid the website to make it easier for people to find doctors. We added a variety of new pictures. You can see it right there. Find a doctor that works for you. This is really what every patient wants, unless, you know, it's just like they have sniffles and they're going in, right? They probably don't care. But when you have a serious condition or a chronic condition or something like that, you want a doctor who works for you and is concerned about you and what's happening to you, and it individualizes your care, personalizes your care to you.
Yeah. So Hannah, can you show the video? Can you show their new video? Then we can talk about it.
This is less than 2 minutes long.
Yeah. Then we've got a little time to talk about it.
Okay.
The evidence is everywhere. Our nation has a serious healthcare problem. The mission of medicine has been taken over by the business of healthcare. Physicians are spending less time with patients and more time buried under electronic health record reporting requirements. And patients are receiving impersonal care while having their personal information captured and shared with government and big business. Fortunately, a parallel system is disrupting the status quo, bringing patient-friendly care back to healthcare. At the heart of it all is the Wedge of Health Freedom. The Wedge is not insurance. It's a national online directory of direct pay practices. In the Wedge, the confidential patient-doctor relationship is restored, like it was before intrusive government mandates. The Wedge is a place where doctors are free to provide personalized care and be their patients' advocates. When you see a doctor in the Wedge, you receive their undivided attention, a friendly smile, a listening ear, direct eye contact, and yes, maybe even a handshake. For physicians, the Wedge is where you connect your independent practice with a growing movement of like-minded individuals who want a trusted, accessible relationship with their doctor. Here, doctors can focus on caring for patients instead of worrying about endless paperwork and reporting requirements. Join the Wedge of Health Freedom and help restore the patient-doctor relationship. And don't forget to share this video with anyone who wants a doctor who cares and works for them.
Very cool. Are we listed in there, Twyla? And if we're not, how do we get to be listed in there?
You go, I do not know if you're listed in there, but you go to jointhewedge.com, and then there are several questions that you need to answer. And then we curate it, right? So we don't just let people go on just because they answer the questions, and then we will just look at the website of anybody who wants to join. As long as it works, then we just add them to the Wedge.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm
no cost. There's no cost for patients. There's no cost for doctors. This is all about a part of our nonprofit mission to restore patient and doctor freedom across the country by building a parallel system. And eventually, we want to have hospitals, cash-based hospitals in the system.
Oh, won't that just be wonderful? I mean, yes. That'll just be great. Yeah, as soon as we're done with our interview here tonight, I'm going to go right upstairs. I'm going to look at that, make sure that Tenpenny Integrated Medical Center and our Tenpenny Health Restoration Center and our ECP studio is on there where people can find out about us, because we've been cash-based since the beginning, since we opened in 1996, and we always have paper charts. We've always had paper charts, so we've never had electronic medical records, and we don't participate with Medicare, Medicaid, or any insurance company. We will take your health savings account dollars. We will allow you to do that because that's your money, and that's equivalent way of paying cash.
Yeah.
So this is really great. That was a really cool video. I like the little guy wiggling his ears.
Dr. Blue.
So are you having any luck with subspecialists that are, you know, usually so extremely expensive for patients? I have a friend who has an eye problem, and he's gone to several optometrists and then got bumped up to an ophthalmologist and then to a neuro-ophthalmologist. And now they're still trying to figure out what his eye problem is, and he doesn't have any insurance. And the neuro-ophthalmologist's office visit was over $700. I mean, are you being able to do anything like with negotiated fees or anything like that?
We don't do that. We let all the doctors, they just charge whatever they charge. But the idea is, as we get more and more and more doctors on there and doing cash, they will have to compete with each other. So I don't know that there's a lot of subspecialists, but we definitely have specialists. For example, there is a cardiologist in the state of Tennessee who does echocardiograms for $179.
Oh, my goodness.
I know people have traveled to his office in Tennessee. And now his business has gotten so much attention from the local community that they have asked him to set up a primary care cash-based practice there. And that is what exactly he is attempting to do. So, you know, there is definitely a need for this in the communities, and a lot of people who just want somebody who will work for them. Now, they're on the Wedgers, both direct primary care, which is a subscription base, right? So you pay monthly or annually or quarterly. But there's also fee for service. So you come in and you see what every service costs. Just like this cardiologist, you can see that the cardiology or the echocardiogram is $179. And then if there is an additional doctor's visit on top of that, there might be that. And then that's it. That's all there is, because that's, you know, the services are listed. And so there are both types on the Wedge, and there are both types within the cash base universe that is growing as doctors are trying to escape the controls of government, the controls of the health plans, the controls of Medicare Advantage. They're trying to escape from all those controls. And as one doctor told me, so they can sleep at night. They can know that they can take care of patients the way patients should be taken care of. They can do their best. It can be back to the mission of medicine rather than the business of healthcare. And so we are really hoping to use this to draw doctors out of the corporate side as we're building the parallel side, right? And draw patients out of the corporate side into the parallel mission-oriented side, because this is how healthcare should be. And in a cash-based practice, it can be both affordable, transparent, confidential, all the things that patients want it to be. It doesn't have to be the price of today. It never has to be the price of today.
So Twyla, hold that thought right there. And we're going to take a quick break right now. We'll be right back. We've got so many more things to talk about, including a couple of questions that I have about the wedge. But sit tight, everybody. We'll be right back. Gold and silver always has value. It never goes to zero. And it's a great place to store your wealth. It's a great place to have it for inheritance, for your children, for your grandchildren. And when you can actually get the coins itself, when you can actually do that, you can actually even have a coin collection. I think that some of the older Walking Liberty silver dollars are just amazing, that come from the early 1900s. And I think that everybody should have some of those, not only for history, but as a place to protect your wealth, protect your money going forward. It never goes to zero. Like our paper fiat money with hyperinflation and the things that we may be seeing in the future, our dollar could literally go to zero. It could be worth nothing. You might even not even be able to barter with it, but you will always have value in gold and silver. You'll always be able to eat with it. You'll be able to trade with it. And it's a great place to store your wealth. Particular company that we work with, because we really, again, trust their product. We believe that this company has a high level of integrity and they are great with customer service. To learn more, go to bit.ly/gold-silver-drt. That's bit.ly/gold-silver-drt. There are an awful lot of people that are affiliates for Mike Lindell because we all really appreciate what he does for this country. We appreciate the hard work that he does, and we appreciate his products. He has more than 200 products in his store, everything from pillowcases and comforters to doggy beds and to wonderful slippers and bathrobes. There's something for everybody and something for everybody in each age group. I mean, one of the things that I really like a lot are the pillowcases, the children's Bible story pillowcases that I just think are such a great way when you tuck your child into bed at night to use these pillowcases that they come from his store to start to tell the story about Adam and Eve and Noah and the Ark and different things. And they're colorful and they're really pretty. So from children all the way up to your gentlemen that want to have like nice slippers, or to your dog, the doggy beds and things are just wonderful. So my pillow is a great place to shop for just about anything that you want. And if you use our affiliate code DRT, that helps us, that can benefit us, that helps Mike Lindell, and you'll get a great product for anybody that you're shopping for. Well, welcome back, everyone. We've been having a great conversation with our monthly guest that we have the last Monday night of every month, Twyla Braze with Citizens Council for Health Freedoms. They are on the move, man. They are doing so many things. I'd like to shift gears a little bit now and talk about some of the things that you've been talking about with ivermectin and the war on ivermectin, which has caused quite a buzz lately. And I don't understand it, but it still seems to be so controversial, which it shouldn't be. So what have you guys been doing with the ivermectin fiasco?
So one thing we have been doing is we have been tracking the lawsuit. So there's a lawsuit by three physicians, Dr. Mary Talley Bowden, Paul Merrick, and Dr. Apter in California. And so the three of them sued the FDA, HHS actually, but the FDA is under HHS. So they sued the government for practicing medicine without a license. And just February 5th, the Politico came out with this tiny little paragraph that said that there was a sealed motion and that the judge is allowing part of the lawsuit to go forward and denying another part. Well, it's a sealed motion, so we don't know what they denied and we don't know what they allowed to go forward. So we put out a press release to say the public needs to understand what is going on here. because this is so important for the future of autonomy and medical freedom, and the government should never be in this position to take a life-saving drug and do all their best to make sure that none of us could get our hands on it, right? So this is just a criminal act. And so I'm glad that part of it is going forward. I don't know what part that is, but at least it's still moving forward. And so that's one thing that we've been doing. Another thing is just to try to get the public to understand how important this war on ivermectin is. You know, there's a lot of the public who just wants to think COVID is over. COVID is not over. There's so many facets that we're finding out news about, whether it is the fact of what the shots are doing now to people, or new things we found out about how the shots were made, or the fact of more information that we've learned now about probably the U.S. funding this gain of function research in China, and you know, being part of everything that has transpired here, funded partially at least by the U.S. government. But the ivermectin piece is the war can't be won in their direction. It has to be won in our direction, because the government must not be ever allowed again to practice medicine. You know, you probably remember the tweet, which came out August, I think it was August 21st, 2021. And they said, you're not a horse, you're not a cow, come on, stop it, right? And this is what the lawsuit is about, because very forcefully they said stop. And when they said stop by this tweet, a lot of the hospitals stopped making it available. The pharmacies stopped dispensing it. People found themselves without anywhere to get this life-saving medication unless they were going to get it from India. And if they didn't get it in time, you know, they could end up in the cytokine storm and end up in the hospital and ventilated and remdesivir, you know, and likely lots of people died all because of this. And so this war has to be won. And the other thing is, as I'm traveling around the country for this month, I have been sharing the story of the 19-year-old in Cameroon. It's a case history that was reported by some researchers, and a 19-year-old girl who decided to commit suicide, and her drug of choice was ivermectin. And so, you know, she was found after she had taken 400 pills out of a 500-pill bottle. She had neurological symptoms and gastric symptoms and vision symptoms, and all they did was take her to the hospital for 5 days, plug in an IV, and wait for the symptoms to resolve. Now she passed the test that she needed for college, and she is in college doing just fine. So, you know, what you can see from that story is it's actually pretty hard to die from ivermectin. If you took that much of Tylenol, there'd be no chance for you. Tylenol is very dangerous if you do an overdose, and it's sitting on the shelf.
Yeah, you know, I'm not through with it yet. Sometimes people send me really long documentaries. They're like, you know, 2 hours, 2.5 hours long, and it's like, I don't have that much time. And second of all, I don't have that much attention span, because the whole time I'm watching this, my brain's going, but you should be doing this and you should be doing that. And you should be over there doing this. So I usually have to take those very long and chunk them up. I'll watch like 30 minutes at a time till I get through it. And I was watching a documentary this weekend. I was in Texas in the hotel room about hydroxychloroquine, which has the same horrible track record of like ivermectin, meaning that it was a life-saving drug, that they refused it, that they said it could kill you, it could cause heart problems, and it should be taken off the market, and all these studies that were fabricated by the government that pulled it off the market, a second life-saving drug that again, the government had no business doing. That we had the Mockingbird media telling everybody about how unsafe this was, and because it was something that President Trump had wanted them to investigate, just because it came out of his mouth, they weren't going to allow it to happen. Right. So, you know, we've got two incidents, you know, in our very recent past of the government practicing medicine without a license, and then also releasing the vaccine under an EUA, which violated two FDA laws before it even got into your arm. You know, it violated two arms. One, that there was another drug that was available, the ivermectin or the hydroxychloroquine. That was the one law. The second law was that the vaccine had to be safer and less deadly than the illness it was trying to prevent, which we found absolutely the opposite to be true. And nobody seems to be holding the government to task for any of these things, Twyla. I mean, we've got evidence against the government, against Wuhan labs, against the gain-of-function research about ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, the EUAs. I could go on and on for, another half an hour about all the violations, but nothing seems to happen. These same people, nobody's been arrested. Nobody's lost their job. Fauci's coming out with a book about how great he was. Mm-hmm. Nobody's had their pensions suspended. Nobody's done anything to lift a finger. Where are you working in that arena? And what do you think about, are we ever going to see justice for anything that's happened to us?
So I think it's difficult because the government is such a beast to try to go after, right? They've got so many of their own attorneys. They can keep you running around in circles and spending money until you have no more money to spend. And then you have to have somebody in the government itself who is willing to go after all of this nefarious activity and all of these people who, like Fauci, right? Fauci says on February 1st, 2020, that credible scientists have said that it looks like it was engineered. And in February, he said that the masks didn't work. And then, flip-flops, right? And so you have to have somebody who's really willing to go after it. And in our political cycle, right, it's like 2 years or 4 years. And somebody's got to be willing to think that they can carry it over or have accomplish it in that time. And that may not work. Now, what I'm most excited about, let's just say President Trump gets back in. Maybe some of your listeners have heard about his October 2020 executive order on Schedule F. So Schedule F, he did this executive order. It was supposed to take effect at the start of his second term. And I can just imagine it's probably still sitting there. And we've been asked to, provide, ideas for, a possible transition. It's just one of the things that you have to think about is what could really help us with all of these agencies to shut down their powers. And Schedule F, which was his idea, would make all of any government employee who even touched policy or regulations or rulemaking or issued, proclamations or guidances or, whatever, they'd all become part of Schedule F. And under Schedule F, they could be fired. Boom, just like that. So there's a whole bunch of people in the federal government who could just be released. And so everything would change. And actually, if you just Google Schedule F Trump, you will find articles from people very, very afraid of this executive order. And I think this is what has to happen. Plus, Senator Lee and Senator Cruz, I think, but for sure Lee, he has the RAINS Act. And it would require every regulation to be voted on by Congress before it would become effective. In essence, the Congress would have to take over the responsibility for absolutely every rule out there. They could no longer point or call up these administrators into committee hearings and complain to the committee administrators. They should never be complaining to the committee administrators. They're the ones who are supposed to have all the legislative authority, but they've delegated it to these agencies. And the RAINS Act would send it back to Congress, and they'd be responsible for every last rule that would be issued, and they could be accountable to their voters because it would no longer be, HHS did that. I'm not responsible. Oh, yes, you are. We have your vote right here.
Wow. Well, I remember when Trump passed that, I didn't realize that he'd done it as an executive order, that Schedule F, but I remember him talking about it like, he's a big employer. I mean, he's got lots of businesses and employs tens of thousands of people. And he was like, what do you mean I can't fire that person over there that's not doing anything? They're sitting around doing nothing. You mean I can't fire him? Nope, can't fire him. And I'm sure that, those sorts of people would be campaigning against him being elected because they wouldn't want to lose their job. And they're getting paid well to sit around and do nothing. So it's one more reason to kind of campaign for Trump, I guess, to get that back into the office. Thank you for sharing that. That's really, really important. We'll be talking about that more, I'm sure. And changing gears just a little bit. I mean, one of the other things on your list, which kind of goes along with firing people, is a press release that CCHF sent out about this growing issue of private equity firms buying physician practices. I mean, like BlackRock or Amazon or other than that, they are changing the mission of medicine to making it be all totally the business of medicine and the bottom line and have nothing to do with taking care of patients. Why would private equity firms want to buy physician practices?
Well, healthcare is one of the largest businesses in the nation. And so this has for them a potential upside if they can control the doctors, control what's happening in the exam room. All this money is pouring into healthcare. Some of these equity firms may have health insurers versus doctors, or the doctors are part of a bigger health system, or the health system buys the insurance, or the insurance buys the health system and then owns the physicians. So if you actually invest in something where you have not only the doctors and the insurance and you can control the whole ball of wax, you know, you can squeeze a lot of money out of that. And so I think that that's probably why they see an advantage. They're not going after it because they think there's some disadvantage to it, but it's all about their ability to control what happens. They can limit the amount of dollars that they pay the doctors. Doctors have fewer and fewer places to go to today. Another reason why we want to get them all into the wedge and set them free and set their patients free. And so, you know, there's a lot of money. That's just the end thing. If there's a lot of money and if they can control it and they can stop it from leaving once they own it, then there's a lot of money for them to be made.
Do you think patients will be able to be informed of who their doctor's boss is? Do you think that they'll be able to know that, you know, because years ago, I mean, in the 50s and the 60s, you know, when you look back at the movies and the television shows like Doctors Know Best and, you know, the family doctors and all these things, and then probably in through the probably the 80s and the 90s is when physician practices got bought up by big healthcare systems. And for the audience, that people wouldn't know this, that the physicians sold out to big health conglomerates. Like everybody in Cleveland works for either University Hospital or the Cleveland Clinic. And they sold it to the doctors along the line of, you know, so much of your overhead goes to electronic records, and it goes to paying your front desk staff and paying all their benefits and all those different things. All that money could be going into your pocket. Let us take that over for you. And so then the doctors became W-2 employees. They're no different to the healthcare systems than a McDonald's worker or somebody that works at Dunkin' Donuts, other than the fact that, they make a lot of money, but they have no autonomy. And it's one of the reasons why physicians during COVID couldn't step in the gap and say, wait just a minute. Ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine work. I'm going to prescribe it, or I'm not going to give these COVID jabs, because their boss, the hospital system and the insurance systems and Medicare and all that stuff, would fire them. And they could just be easily as fired as if, and I use this analogy a lot, Twyla, where I say that if you were working for Dunkin' Donuts and this person was coming through and they have they bought a dozen of the sickest, most sickeningly sweet, you know, everything with frosting and all that stuff on it. And the cashier went, you know, that's really bad for your health. You know, you really shouldn't be eating that. That sugar's bad for you, and that cholesterol, it's going to be really bad. You know, that's really not really bad for you, but they work for Dunkin' Donuts. And the person, and, you know, the first thing you know, the manager's going to, they're going to get fired. Mm-hmm. And the same thing when the physicians try to make a decision out of line with what their boss is. Do you think, and I don't think that a lot of people know that. I mean, they don't have any idea. They go to see the doctor. They go to the office. And even though their office may be in, say, the clinic, Cleveland Clinic, they still think that that's their office and their front desk people. And it's not, which, again, is the value of the wedge, because those people do have their own practices. What will happen in the next step? If now, you know, the physicians' practices, these private equity firms will have to come in and offer them even more money than what the Cleveland Clinic and University Hospital pays them to do their job. I mean, it's the only way that they're going to get them away from there. where is that going to leave the patient in the middle? Where is that going to leave the patient? You know, how are they going to ever know?
Well, there are two questions in there. So where does it leave the patient? It leaves the patient vulnerable. And because the whole healthcare system is no longer working for the patient, although doctors and nurses, lots of them are trying their level best to do so, but the whole system itself is not working for the patient. It's working for itself. It's working for the stockholders. It's working for the stakeholders. It's working for, you know, lots of other things, but not for the patient. But whether the patient knows or not is, you know, like your show is helping here to let patients know. But one of the things that, you know, in my book, I actually have sections in the back of it. One is for doctors, one is for patients, one is for employers or members of Congress or something. Oh, yeah, that's right. Not employers. State legislators, the Congress. And I have questions and I have things to do. And right. And one of the things that patients should do when they're at the doctor's office and the doctor says X, I think you have this and you need to do this and we're going to put you on that. And one of the things the patient should do is they should say, you know, very kindly but firmly, I know that the electronic health record limits your ability to provide me care. And so I would just like to know, is this the very best thing for my care, or is this the only thing that you can offer me through the electronic health record? And so when you ask that question and you ask it very nicely and you know, a lot of them, it might prick their conscience because they know that there's something else that would be better for you, but it's not there, or it's not there for your age, or they want you to go through three different medications before you get to the medication that the doctor actually knows works, you know, all of that sort of thing. It might prick their conscience and they might actually tell you. Some of them might be perturbed, but if you say it in a really nice way, and in an understanding way, and you're just trying to figure out whether this is the best for them, you might be surprised what you will learn.
Yeah, that's really, really good about pricking their conscience, because if they don't change their mind, they still need their conscience pricked.
Mm-hmm. That's what I
really, because it may not happen at the moment that you're there talking to that doctor, but it may chew in the back of their mind over the next hours or days or weeks until they're like, you know, there are things that are better that is not there for a box to check. I've told a lot of cancer patients that they, when they see their oncologist, that they need to say, what is the fewest number of drugs with the least number of side effects that I can take for the shortest period of time to get the job done? Mm-hmm. You know, and because oncology is the one area of medicine where they get paid to administer more drugs, and they get paid a lot. I mean, and I've seen the wide gaps in their twilight. It's just blown my mind that patients with this, you know, a cancer, say breast cancer or something, they get, and I always tell them, get three opinions, because you want to know what's the safest drug for the shortest period of time with the least amount of side effects that you can take to get the job done. I've seen it range from one drug a day for a couple weeks to three drugs five times a week, you know, or more. I mean, it's kind of scary that conventional medicine, especially in oncology, has such a lack of standardization. I mean, I always thought that people, if you go through all these things to get diagnosed and staging and all that stuff, so that when you get the diagnosis, you know, if you could go to 10 different oncologists and get the same treatment, and that's not true.
No, and the interesting thing is I just actually told somebody with cancer recently about an article that was on a Substack. So I don't know if your listeners understand Substacks, but all sorts of people can have them, right? And so there is an article about a man with cancer, and he started taking ivermectin. And so he never lost his hair with chemo, if I remember this correctly. You can just look this up, and if I'm wrong, you know, you'll figure that out. But anyway, his doctors, the nurses, all these staff was like, I don't understand why you look so good, you know, but he never told them about the ivermectin. And just recently, I visited the clinic. I just happened to be there on a day that he had been there. And I was just saying, have you ever heard about this case? And they said, he comes here. That's where he got it. I was like, oh, okay then. But anyway, the wonderful thing about this is that the last MRI of his tumor, if I recall correctly in this story, it was like something like 2/3 or 3/4 of his tumor was just now fiber. It was no longer a living thing. And so, you know, our oncologists even thinking about that, the NIH was doing research on ivermectin. And so they have known for a long time that this is a safe and effective drug, right? For years, they've been doing some research for cancer using ivermectin. And so now we have this story, this amazing story of this guy. And so, yeah, you know, everybody needs to get lots of opinions and they need to maybe look outside of traditional medicine to see if there's something else that's possible.
Yeah, it goes all the way back for a long time that we've thought that that cancer was either caused by viruses or by fungus. So there we go. Well, Twyla, we could stay online here tonight. We've got hours and hours more material. So thank you so much for being with us here tonight and being our regular guest, because you always bring so much to the table. Just as we're closing out, just tell them what your website is and where they can donate to your cause.
Oh, thank you. Yes, the website is cchfreedom.org, cchfreedom.org. And there's a large donate button there. And we certainly would appreciate that, because that's how we do our work. We don't get any government grants. We just get people.
And it's a tax deductible donation,
it is,
right?
That's correct.
So if you have lots of money to donate, this is the organization that you should donate to. So for that, I want to thank Twyla again and everybody for being here tonight. And I want to close out. I always close out all my broadcasts with one of my favorite verses from the Bible, whether it's live or whether it's pre-recorded, with rejoice in hope, be patient in trouble, be persistent in prayer. That's Romans 12:12. So until the next time, lean into God. He will never let you down. Thank you for joining us tonight on the Tenpenny Files on Your Health. If you want to listen to this again, it is here on Bridie on TV. It's also on my Substack. It will be posted. They're always posted on Thursday. So mark your calendars for next Monday night at 7 p.m. We'll see you on the next episode of the Tenpenny Files on Your Health. Have a good night and God bless.
In a time when truth is censored, one name stands out. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, the relentless seeker of knowledge and defender of freedom. Explore groundbreaking findings at drtenpenny.com. Ignite your mind with riveting podcasts, explosive articles, research-driven substacks, webinars, ebooks, and more. In an era plagued by environmental toxins and vaccine-related exposures, Dr. Tenpenny has expertly crafted a selection of safe detox protocols that facilitate profound healing at a cellular level. It's time to cleanse, rejuvenate, and restore your body's vitality. With heart damage on the rise, Dr. Tenpenny introduces nationwide ECP therapy to repair hearts and achieve optimal health. Seize the opportunity and embrace the wealth of resources, information, and health recommendations awaiting you at drtenpenny.com, and become a Tenpenny podcast member to join our mission in the quest for uncensored truth, the health of our nation, and medical freedom.